That would have obviated the need to transport the residue up the difficult winding paths of the crater sides. They continued straight on toward the mountain and its palace. Ironheart was burning to ask his friend how the Zadar were going to be able to deposit and hide the Cordrian cocoon. They were all being carefully watched. The dark mood was robbing him of courage and any sense of optimism. As he raised his head, the sky seemed so very far away.
"Fracas, you know I don't mind being under the earth, but this is different. I feel so ill at ease here. I want to be back in the sun," he prayed.
They rode past more artworks dedicated to the honour of Teon and the Unslayables, and to the memory of those who had lived in the city before the Star of Judgment fell and destroyed it. As if obeying a soundless command, Utsintas and his men bowed their heads.
"Show respect," the elf told Tungdil and the dwarves. "Bow your heads."
"To dead Alpha," Tungdil nearly laughed.
"To their spirits," replied Utsintas quietly. "They remain here to guard the moon pond against the elves. When the Jonna clan returned, the spirits appeared to them and demanded everything you see here as payment for their protection."
To Ironheart's surprise, the scholar did indeed bow his head, so the rest of the band felt duty-bound to follow suit, pretending to offer respect.
"I remember. I felt I was never alone when I came into the old city of Jon to burn it down," Tungdil said to the elf. "I thought what I could hear was the sound of the wind."
"It's the spirits,"
Utsintas repeated, urging his fireball forward.
"Let us make haste. He will not receive us after sundown."
They rode to the foot of the mountain. A mighty staircase led upwards. This was also constructed of grey marble. To the right and left, there flowed streams of crimson, going down in steps, with fountains every 30 paces spurting red water. The fireballs and ponies took the steps one at a time, until they had covered a third of the way. From there, the party dismounted and went on foot. Ironheart found the stair climbing quite strenuous, as the height of each step was designed for an elf's stride and not for dwarf legs. He could not help admiring the masonry work. It seemed to have been perfectly executed, as far as he could judge. Perfect, as always, for Alphar. To add sparkle to the stairs, every third step had been highly polished and decorated with jewels. Some of the steps were made of transparent crystal, allowing a view of the red water that flowed beneath.
"They've taken a lot of trouble," said Tungdil, "though I miss the ivory tower."
"The Jonna clan did not wish to invite comparison with the Unslayables. Only the Emperor Aphaton would be entitled to do that. He lives elsewhere."
Utsintas took the last stair and reached the plateau in front of the palace. Tungdil followed him, then came Ironheart and the rest. They were now 40 paces from the mighty marble facade. Boindil doubted that a crossbow bolt could reach the height of the roof, where the dark dome shimmered and shone.
"And what kind of palace has the Emperor built for himself?" Tungdil wanted to know.
"As far as I know, he does not have one. I have never had the chance of visiting him."
Utsintas led them to the door at the end of a row of giant columns supporting the entrance canopy.
Ironheart grinned again. "You won't be allowed to because the black eyes from the south won't let you in," he thought.
He suddenly realized that the Alphar patrols in Jon Bara were not for quelling Goregar resistance, but for keeping their own unwelcome relatives off their backs.
"I'll take any bets no southern elf has ever been in this crater."
The Alphar had not lost their love of working with all types of bone. The dwarves saw bones of all shapes and sizes fixed to the walls as adornment, arranged to make fascinating patterns, leading the beholder's gaze along to the entrance itself. The portal, which was 7 paces high and 4 wide, was decorated with slices of bone arranged with studious accuracy. Skulls filled the gaps. The head shapes of all the races in Girdlygard were represented here, except for the Alfar. 4 sentries guarded the entrance and opened the door for the visitors. Beyond the portal was a high, dark corridor, its walls covered in carmine red fabric. No gruesome pictures, no bonework, nothing to upset or horrify you.
Not as I thought at all. Ireheart was slightly puzzled as he followed Tungdil and Utsintas along winding passageways.
The company halted in front of a black door.
I will tell the Jonna clan you are here, and what you want.
Their leader knocked on the door, and an elf wearing a long robe let him in. Outside, Ireheart could not contain himself. He pushed up his visor.
I can't believe it, he said quietly,
wiping the sweat off his face. The climb had made him quite hot.
I'm right in the middle of the Black Eyes realm.
Tungdil quickly snapped his friend's visor shut.
Don't say a word. They may be watching us.
Ireheart pushed it up again.
But my tongue is on fire. I need... Will you be quiet?
Snarled Balindar, giving him a shove. The visor clanged shut once more.
He'll be the death of us if he can't stop talking.
Push me around again, Fithling, and...
Utsintas reappeared and led them through a second dark red door. Here they were received by 7 Alfar in long black robes. They did not seem concerned that they would be significantly outnumbered should it come to a fight. They ushered Tungdil and his escort into the presence of the ruler of Jon. The dwarves entered the black painted hall. Blue flames flickered in shallow braziers. Dark red lengths of fabric hung from the ceiling, and there was a smell of smouldering spices. They walked toward an elevated throne covered in a white velvet throw, which contrasted effectively with the dark-haired elf in full armor who sat there. He held a white fan in one hand to shield his face from their inquiring eyes.
I could try numbering them so I don't mix them up, thought Ireheart, smiling to himself behind his visor.
Tungdil halted and sketched a bow.
I am...
I know who you are, the elf interrupted. Even if you do use a different name.
Ireheart was taken aback. A feeling of unease made the hairs on his arms stand up. He checked the exit and gripped his crow's beak. The elf rose, elegance itself, and strode down the 4 steps.
I did not think I should ever see you again.
Tungdil's eyes narrowed. Boindil saw that he was struggling with his memory.
How long has it been? 200 cycles?
The elf lowered his fan and gave the one-eyed dwarf a friendly smile of welcome. On his neck there was a narrow wound caused by a crossbow bolt, and his cheek also bore a scar.
Tirigon!
Tungdil beamed and opened his arms wide. Then something happened that was, from Ireheart's point of view, quite appalling. The elf bent down and hugged the scholar as if greeting a very close friend. Both of them were laughing.
Can I call you Balodil, or shall we leave it at Tungdil?
The dwarf behind Ireheart gave a sob of exasperation and turned away in distress. Presumably one of the Zadar, thought Boindil, given a theatrical and emotional performance like that.
Keep quiet, can't you?
He whispered, lifting his visor to be heard.
The scholar knows what he's doing.
But while the words were leaving his mouth, he was himself beset with uncertainty. The familiarity with which the elf and Tungdil had greeted each other, the way those 2 dark figures fitted into the world of evil, all this served to stir the doubts Boindil had so recently succeeded in putting aside. The Zadar swallowed another sob and fell silent, nodding. Ireheart turned to the front and watched as Tungdil and the elf clasped hands again, now in deep discussion. They must know each other from their time in the Black Abyss. He was trying to work out how the Black Eyes had been able to cross the barrier before Tungdil. Suddenly, he felt sick. He remembered exactly when it was he had last heard the name Tiragon. They were standing in the presence of the perverted and legendary Alf, who had wiped out the last of the elves of Girdlegard.
"What will he do if one of our company drops his disguise?"
Chapter 15. Girdlegard. John Barra, formerly the elf realm of Lacintiel. John. Late winter, 6491st to 6492nd solar cycles.
"Who would have thought we would meet here in John Barra, of all places?"
Tiragon gazed at Tungdil in delighted surprise. Ironheart saw that the two had enjoyed more than mere acquaintance. It did nothing to reassure him. His scholar, together with one of the worst Alfar of the past 200 cycles, the one who had eliminated the last of the elves of Girdlegard.
"This feels like trouble."
He was itching to join in the conversation, but knew he must not try, now less than ever. Tungdil laughed darkly.
"You know that dwarves hate water as much as you hate elves. I would never have been able to swim through the moon pond. The curse of Elria would have seen me drowned."
"You had to wait so long to return."
The elf looked at the escort, and Ironheart found the blue-eyed gaze very unpleasant when it rested on him.
"But I see you have taken over our desires."
"They follow me because I am the High King," he smiled. "You have no need to fear me, Tiragon. I have come to make you and the Jonna clan an offer."
"I am delighted to hear it. I am only sorry that my brother and sister are not with me. They're in Goregar, hunting down the woman who caused this."
He pointed at the injury to his face.
"You leave your revenge up to them."
"I was at death's door, Balo." Tungdil. "It was Millennia of Ido. The cowardly bitch shot at me with a crossbow and sent a bolt through my neck long after our duel was over."
Ironheart noted that the elf was omitting to mention which of them had won the duel.
"So it won't have been you, Scarface."
Tiragon signaled for chairs and refreshments to be brought. They sat down at a table in front of the throne.
"And anyway, one of us had to look after John Barra. What do you think of the city?"
"It is very different from the true John."
Tungdil frowned.
"They tell us my name is spoken here with hatred."
"Only by those who do not know you from the other side. Do not be concerned."
Tiragon gestured to one of the human slaves to pour their drink. The slave woman served the elf first, and Ironheart last. Ironheart guessed her beauty was perfection to human eyes, but for himself, he preferred something with a little more substance, like his own Goda. This one looked more like an elf than a human, slender, slim-faced, and with graceful movements.
"Seeing you here, I must assume you were still kindly disposed to us."
Tiragon sounded curious.
"We once worked hand in hand and with great success."
"That's the way it should still be."
Tungdil drank his wine.
"The dwarves have elected me their High King, and the tribe of the Thirdlings will serve me as their supreme leader. My reputation with the Thirdlings is now very different, Hargerin tells me."
"You have considerable authority with them as a warrior."
The elf had understood the implication.
"Thus it will be with you we negotiate when we need Thirdling support to police the Three Kingdoms. I am pleased to hear it."
Tiragon raised his goblet.
"To the old times!"
"The very old times,"
Tungdil returned the toast.
"Of course, I am on your side. I hear there have been disputes with your relations from the south."
Ironheart had interpreted Tungdil's words as a message, the very old times, the good times. Tiragon's serenity faded. He drained his cup and called for more.
There is no evidence that they are actually related to us, he snapped. But it is true. We don't like them, and they don't like us.
Tungdil licked a droplet of wine from the rim of his goblet. But they have superiority of numbers. Again, another hidden message.
We shall be glad of your help. My siblings will be pleased.
Turrigan lifted his cup in salute.
Since I am aware that you never act without due thought and intent, tell me what you want in return.
All the dwarf kingdoms. The response came swift as a bolt from a crossbow. Turrigan lowered his head.
Tungdil, I would happily promise you that, but it is not within my gift.
But when our campaign is over, you will have that power. Ironheart saw the elf registering growing surprise, but no doubt.
He must trust Tungdil to the hilt.
I have a plan. Turrigan laughed out loud.
That cunning dwarf mind, you always had a clever plan over on the other side. Your plans always worked, so I've no reason to doubt you now.
He sat back in his chair.
Tell me about it.
Tungdil outlined the scheme to play the dragon off against Lot Ionan. The Cordrian and the tribe of Fithlings would be destroyed together by the Thirdling army. The route is already secure. You and your Alfar will be ready to attack the southern Alfar. Turrigan raised his hand.
No. They will be fighting Lot Ionan under that fool, the Emperor Aphaton. They're off to the Blue Mountains with everything they've got.
All the better. Tungdil pretended he had not known about the attack. So the dragon can launch himself on the victor. You bring your forces up secretly, and we join you as soon as we've got rid of the Cordrian and the Fithlings. After that, Girdlegard will be yours. He leaned forward. That's if you leave the dwarf realms to me.
Here am I, making a pact with a dwarf against my own emperor, the last of the descendants of the Unslayables,
Turrigan said thoughtfully.
That is mad enough to work. I trust you and your bright ideas, Balodil.
He frowned in annoyance.
I mean, Tungdil.
By Vrakus, when he was with the monsters, he called himself by the name of his own son.
Ironheart's wavering conviction that this was indeed the true Tungdil, and not an impostor, started to gain firmer footing.
How else could he have known that name?
And, he thought, Tungdil's approach was excellent, although fate was playing a hand in it too. Your siblings will follow your lead, or do I have to fight the three of you when I've polished off the enemies in the north and south? Tungdil's question had a trace of mirth, but its core was serious. Turrigan helped himself to some of the food, putting small slices slowly into his mouth.
They will approve of our pact.
He closed his eyes in pleasure.
That was the first time I've been able to enjoy my food since being wounded.
He invited his guest to eat.
We shall inform you when Aphaton and his false followers leave to attack Lot Ionan. Where do we send the message?
To Hargarin's estate in the north. That's probably the best place to find me while we're preparing for the campaign. And if I'm not there, someone will know how to contact me. Tungdil tried some of the meat.
Let it have been an animal, Vrakus, and not anything else. Not anything they didn't have a use for in their art, prayed Ironheart.
The sight of pink roast flesh made him hungry. It smelled good, even if he had never wanted to sink his teeth into black-eye food.
I will get over to Aphaton as quickly as possible and pay him a call, stated Tungdil,
helping himself to more of the wine.
The Emperor must not think I'm against him. My last meeting went peacefully, and I want to tell him for form's sake that we can continue the alliance.
So, you'll be offering him the same pact?
Yes. But for the campaign against Lot Ionan, my atrocious foster-father.
Tungdil grinned.
Then I shall withdraw and promise to return with a huge army of troops.
He will have the surprise of his life.
Turrigan laid his cutlery aside.
But can I tempt you to stay?
Sacred Forge, don't let us spend a single night in Jun.
Ireheart hoped fervently that Tungdil would turn down the offer of hospitality.
I'm afraid not, old friend. We'll have to move swiftly if we want to meet up with the Emperor, I should think.
Yes, you should find him in the former Alandur. He has given the realm to his friends from the south.
The elf spoke with open dislike.
And what about Jon Balsur? Has it been rebuilt?
Tirigan shrugged.
It's all one to me. While they're living there, it will take us some time to remove their unwholesome influence in the palace. They have no appreciation of art at all, or beauty, poetry, painting, or other aesthetic concepts.
He shuddered.
It is impossible that Teon created them.
Unless he was drunk,
suggested Ireheart over hastily. Tirigan and Tungdil turned their heads slowly in his direction.
So you have people in your escort who enjoy a pleasantry,
the elf noted with amusement.
He never usually has a good joke to tell,
Tungdil tutted and shook his head.
Perhaps a rare spark of inspiration.
Don't let him tell that one to the Emperor. It could be his best and final joke.
The elf rose. One of the robed Alfar approached with a whispered message.
I won't detain you any longer, Tungdil Goldhand.
They embraced.
Our pact is settled. You shall have the dwarf realms, and we shall have Girdly Guard.
His laughter was cold.
The land is in desperate need of our art. It will be a pleasure for me to reform it to our taste.
Even 200 cycles ago, your reputation as an artist was brilliant. I'm keen to see what you're capable of now.
Tungdil clasped the elf's right hand and beamed at him.
In 3 cycles at the outside, it will be us in charge and no one else. Give my greetings to your siblings.
He turned and went to the door. His escort of invisibles surrounded him, and Ireheart was at his side.
Tungdil,
called Tirigan as they reached the door. They stopped, and the one-eyed dwarf turned to face the elf.
What about the barrier? Is it holding again?
Yes,
lied Tungdil, cold as ice.
That's good. It would be bad if your master were to turn up here to demand the return of his armor.
Tirigan paused.
Or did you kill him in the end, perhaps?
I tried to. It didn't work. That's why I want the dwarf realms. No one shall be allowed through the gate.
Tungdil turned and marched off.
Teon is with us, Tirigan. Be sure of that.
They left the hall, and the 7 silent Alfar led them out through the palace to the open air.
At last!
Ireheart took a deep breath and pushed his visor up.
I couldn't have stood it in there much longer. I don't know what it was I was eating, but it doesn't smell nice when it comes up again.
Slynn laughed and opened his own visor as well.
Onions and preserved goggle mints. I saw you had a jar of that in your pack. Goda sent you off with that, then?
You never gave us any.
Tungdil gave him a disapproving look.
How mean of you!
Then he grinned. It was obvious that he was relieved to have got in and out of the palace safely, and with such success.
Ireheart, you must curb your tongue in future. We were in luck. It was a good thing Tirigan found your remark funny.
After a short pause, he added,
So did I, by the way.
Darkness had fallen, but when Ireheart looked up at the sky, he saw no stars.
By Vrakus, he exclaimed, horrified. What have the Alfar done?
All the dwarves looked up and stared.
The constellations have all disappeared,
Balindar whispered fearfully.
The stars must be refusing to shine on an Alfar city,
suggested Slynn. Ireheart conquered his incredulity and turned to the tower with its cables spreading out in all directions.
It's to do with that tower.
Tungdil followed his gaze and thought,
Let's get on, or we'll be arousing suspicion. And pull your visors down in case we meet anyone.
They went down the steps to where their ponies were waiting. Overhead, they caught a slight rustling sound.
I don't believe it,
said Slynn in amazement as he looked up at the sky. A starry firmament had appeared above their heads, but it was different from the one the dwarves were familiar with. The heavenly bodies they saw now were not as they knew them. And there were shimmering moons, 3 or 4 times the size of Gerdlegard's own.
I don't know how they've done it, but the city must have moved to another place entirely.
Boindil could not get his fill of the splendid sight. Balindar snorted.
What do you mean? Perhaps you never stick your head out of the caves. But I've travelled a lot in Gerdlegard. Wherever I went, the stars were always the same.
There's a deep insight for you, mocked Slynn. Only here they're not. But we're still in Gerdlegard.
Exactly. That's why I said they moved the city out of Gerdlegard. I admit it doesn't sound very likely.
So, how do we get back?
Slynn mounted and turned to look at the winding cliffside path.
Who knows where we'll end up?
Over to you, scholar.
Tungdil looked up.
Canvases.
Canvases.
At first, Ironheart did not understand.
Oh, I see. Like curtains, but sideways.
He looked up again.
They pull them across the crater on those ropes to give the Alphar down here an artificial night sky to admire. Is that what you mean?
Exactly, Ironheart. That's what I mean. I expect they cover the city on especially bright days or when it's very hot. A protective screen. That's an amazing amount of trouble to go to.
Balindar seemed relieved at the explanation.
But it's also beautiful. You have to give them that.
Tungdil rode ahead, followed by the Zadar and the rest of the company. Ironheart was pleased to note they were not escorted. Tirigan must trust his dwarf friend completely if he was letting them wander the streets unaccompanied.
Trust and black eyes. That's a weird combination. That Tirigan must have something up his sleeve.
At the bottom of the winding climb, he thought he could make out Utsintas and the Alphar on their fireballs.
I'm not going to let anyone entice me into a trap. This is the ideal chance to get rid of the Cordrian young,
he mouthed to Tungdil.
Already done, answered one of the Zadar. We left the cocoon on the stairway, up to the palace behind one of the pillars. They won't find it, unless they've got a nose like a Cordrian.
Ironheart was impressed.
And now?
Let's ride off to the dragon as fast as we can. Then we plunder his treasure hoard,
said Tungdil, putting his plan to them.
Isn't that a messenger over there with Utsintas? If you say so, I can only see some scrawny black eyes and overweight fighting cows.
Ironheart had given up being surprised about the scholar's unnaturally good vision. Tungdil had been correct. When they reached the Alf and their escort, an Imperial messenger was waiting with an invitation to visit Alandor, now known as Phocion Dwamant. This came from the Emperor Aphaton himself. They could not decline it. And so, the lie Tungdil had told came true after all. Tirigan was on his throne watching the slave woman clear the table. Such lowly occupations were beneath the dignity of an Alf. She fulfilled her function well enough, and was not so ugly as to offend the eye. It had taken some time to find a halfway acceptable slave for the palace.
Tell me, why are most of your kind just so revolting to look at?
He mused, as he sipped from his glass of wine. The slave looked round at him in fright. He had used his own language, and she was not sure she had understood an instruction aright. Anyone in the service of an Alf knew what the punishment would be.
Don't worry,
he said, this time in the tongue spoken in Goregar.
Get on with your work.
One of the robe-wearers came over to him.
John O'Clan, it is as you suspected.
He knelt before the throne.
They had the Cordurians young with them.
Those confounded Zadar. Do they really think I would not recognize them in the armor of the Desirers? Nobody deceives me. They are our creatures, and we are their masters. We created them, he raged, hurling his wineglass across the room. Deserters like Hargerin Deathbringer, they shall die!
He took a deep breath.
Do you have the cocoon now?
The elf nodded.
We had to search for ages, but we found it in the end. Then pack it up well, disguise it as provisions, and send a messenger with it to accompany Goldhand to Phocian Dwarmont. A splendid gift for an emperor, he commanded. Has the Cordrian been sighted again?
Yes, John O'Clan. Not 4 miles from here, it is following the scent of its young.
Tirigan nodded in satisfaction.
Good. Does Goldhand suspect anything? Did he accept the messenger as genuine?
He thinks he's genuine. They are making their way southwest.
Then make sure they get my provisions.
Tirigan waved the slave girl over to give him more wine.
And instruct the patrols that any Zadar found on John Barra territory are to be put to death immediately. That's if any of them survive the Cordrian's attack.
He sat down again. Everything reverted to the normal state of affairs.
Yes, John O'Clan.
The elf hurried out. Tirigan gave a sigh of satisfaction. Aetherton, most of his retinue, and Tungdil with the treacherous Zadar had thus all been catered for. He had known them at first glance by how they held themselves, whatever kind of armour they might have been sporting. And, to his knowledge, no Desirer ever carried a crow's beak at his side.
The good thing is that everyone will think it was a trap set by Tungdil Goldhand to get rid of the Emperor of the Alfar,
he told the slave girl, who, once more, understood not a word he was saying. She indicated the wine jug and a fresh goblet inquiringly. He motioned her to come over.
And if Aetherton survives and wants revenge, he can direct his anger to the Thirdlings. If he dies, I'll be happy to take his place.
He looked along the woman's bare arm, focusing particularly on the elbow.
You have attractive bones, my dear. Did you know that?
He touched her forearm lightly.
Incredibly beautiful bones for a human.
He smiled at her.
I suppose I'll have to look for a new slave woman now. You are destined for higher things. Art will elevate you.
The girl shivered and smiled shyly in response. Girdlegard, Phocian Dwarmont, formerly the elf realm of Alandur. Phocian, late winter, 6491st. To 6492nd solar cycles.
We could have killed the messenger and ridden off to the Red Mountains, murmured Slynn.
We could have pretended we'd been attacked on the way by the resistance movement.
What kind of idiots would be attacking the Black Squadron, especially if it's accompanied by a troop of Alfar?
Hissed Balindar disbelievingly.
Not even I would have believed you.
Ireheart had been listening in on the argument these dwarves had been engaged in ever since leaving John. The Fourthling would find reasons for not going to visit Aetherton, and the Fifthling would find one objection after another to his arguments.
Unbearable. Why don't the two of you shut up? You're lucky you're in the middle of our party, so that the row you're making is drowned out by the sound of hooves. If the Alfar catch wind of what you're saying...
He hoped his hint would be enough. It would be a lie to claim he felt no unease about going from one Alfar realm to another, and he knew nothing about these southern Alfar at all. He had no idea what Aetherton wanted from them. On the one hand, Ironheart loved being on the march again, with that old sense of adventure he had delighted in as a young dwarf. But on the other hand, part of him was pining for the outer lands, where Goda and the children were. He was worried for their safety and concerned about the fortress. The enemy Magus was hugely powerful, it seemed from the hints Tirigan had given. They rode through Phocian Dwarment, known as Alandor, until usurped by the Alf regime.
And who could possibly have opposed them?
The Alfar from the south shared the northerners' love of the obscure and transient. The elf groves had been burned down, as Ironheart could see as they passed through the plain. Trouble had been taken to ensure no trees would ever grow again. Whichever way he looked, he saw only bald hillsides where the snow was now melting. Not even a bush to be seen.
If your eyesight's good, you can see all the way from one end of the Alf realms to the other, said Slynn. Good territory for me and my crossbow.
There's something over there, called Balindar. It looks like a brown block that's just fallen from the sky. They all looked. The first thought that occurred to Ironheart was that it resembled a beehive, only it was square rather than a semi-oval basket shape. He reckoned the dimensions to be around 900 paces wide and 300 high. He could not see how far back it went. It had small tower-like chimneys, and on top of the structure there were flags on tall poles. Ironheart could count 30 levels overall of varying heights. Some of the walls were solid, others were in the form of arcaded galleries with high rooms and painted ceilings. The next floor up consisted of a row of smaller windows reflecting the sun.
"What is that?" asked Slynn.
"A city," replied Balindar. "An artificial mountain with an artificial town."
"That's Phocian,"
said Utsintas, who was riding up at the front with Tungdil.
"There are about 10,000 living here. The southern Alfar like this kind of community."
Tungdil looked at the block.
"What's it like inside?"
"Difficult to describe. Only know it from people's reports because I've never been allowed in."
There was no regret in the elf's voice.
"There will be vertical ravines, long shafts, and hanging gardens reached by bridges. Apparently they sway in the wind that blows through the artificial canyons."
"It sounds a little like a dwarf realm," Slynn remarked quietly to Ironheart.
"Is your brain tangled round your own bowstrings?" he retorted. "There's absolutely nothing dwarf-like about all that."
"Hanging gardens?" asked the warrior in surprise. "Our vegetables grow on the earth, and that's just the way it should be."
They were still a mile away from the city when the gates opened and mounted troops poured out. The messenger exchanged a few swift words with Utsintas and rode off toward the Alfar. They met up halfway and entered into a discussion. Then the messenger gave a hand signal. Utsintas turned to Tungdil.
"You should ride on alone now. My mission ends here."
He gave his escort a command and turned the fireball around. The Alfar thundered off back to Jon Bara. Tungdil scanned the facade.
"Looks like it's going to be an interesting visit that we'll be paying the Emperor," he told Ironheart, then ordered, "We'll ride in as a group. No use of weapons, neither by the Zadar nor by the Desirers. Here we are the guests of the Emperor Aphaton, and shall behave accordingly."
He spurred his pony on, and the company followed him. Ironheart tried to look for distinguishing characteristics in the Phocian Alfar on their nightmares.
"I should have known. They look like all the others."
They had the familiar black Teonium armor, although the runes were a little different this time. But he was no scholar, so he might have been mistaken. The messenger was talking to Tungdil.
"We may enter. The Emperor is expecting us, I'm told,"
the scholar said, interpreting for the dwarves.
"Remember my orders."
Then he cantered off after the Alfar. Ironheart could not deny that this building, city, fortress, or whatever the block was supposed to be, was absolutely fascinating. Not that he would have wanted to live in it, of course, but he was curious. His native dwarf blood made him eager to see more. Secondlings were expert masons, and thus his spirit of inquiry was understandable. As the walls had been plastered, he could not see what the building material had been, and he wondered how they had been able to make the foundations stable enough to carry the weight of the edifice. The archway was 7 paces high and only 5 wide. Eyehart noted the sharp ends of the metal grille suspended above their heads as they went through. This portcullis could be lowered at will for defense. "They seem to set less store on pomp and decoration," Slim whispered. "It is sober and unadorned, apart from the chiseled reliefs in the walls."
"They've been marked into the plasterwork," he said. "But have a look at the great variety of patterns. You'd need a steady hand for that work."
Arriving in a generous interior courtyard, they surveyed the high galleries, windows, and stonework. Inquisitive Alfar were looking down at them, or were talking to each other, or eating. The various levels were connected either by external stairways or lifts on cables. Way above their heads, the clouds raced past.
"Well, when all's said and done, I must admit the Black Eyes have put up something really impressive."
Eyehart patted his pony's neck. When he looked around, he saw the metal grills lowering one after the other as the main gate was shut.
"I've never seen the like."
"They're not so keen on nature, unless they can control it, like in their gardens," Slynn suggested. "Have you noticed? They've turned the entire elf realm into a desert, nothing but flat, bare earth."
"You can see your enemies all the sooner. You're not leaving them any material to attack you with in a siege, and you're not giving them anywhere to hide from your spears and arrows," said Balindar. "It all makes sense. It looks as if they live well here."
"The Emperor awaits Tungdil Goldhand in the audience chamber," said the messenger. "Only 5 guards may accompany you. The rest must remain in the courtyard."
Tungdil chose Slynn, Eyehart, Balindar, and 2 Zadar.
"Whatever happens, you are not to kill a single elf," he warned Hargerin and Baskalin.
A different elf led them this time, and the messenger stayed to supervise the dwarves. They were transported to an upper story in a lift that was operated by means of a lever.
"Caudrian dung. But it's a bit like our own constructions," thought Eyehart.
At the end of the ascent, they stepped out into a hallway of columns that were maybe 10 paces high. The walls were painted in matte white and decorated with black shapes reminiscent of silhouette figures depicting battles, cityscapes, or erotic scenes. However much Eyehart looked around him as they approached the throne, he noted none of the morbid aesthetic that held sway among the northern Alfar. Aefyrton was seated on the throne.
"He hasn't grown any older,"
Eyehart recognized the child of the Unslayables at once. His appearance was unique. Chest, abdomen, lower body, shoulders, and upper arms were all covered in armor directly fused to his shimmering white flesh. The head was shaved, emphasizing the shape of the long, sharp ears. His hands lay in heavy gauntlets. He had draped his lower body in a kind of wraparound skirt, revealing his naked toes beneath the hem. In his right hand, Aefyrton gripped a spear with a slender blade sporting greenish, glowing runes.
"Tungdil Goldhand is High King of the Dwarf Tribes," Aefyrton called across the hall, staring at them.
At least, Eyehart suspected he was staring at them. You could not see what he was looking at because the black eye sockets were unfathomable.
"So both of us have risen to supreme power over our 2 peoples."
He waited until the dwarves were standing before him, then bowed his head.
"Welcome to Phocion."
"My thanks, Emperor,"
Tungdil sketched a bow.
"I often think of our talk on board ship. I told you why I had chosen my name."
"The life star of the elves, you said," Tungdil responded. "It has disappeared now from the night sky."
Yes.
On their return, the Janna clan were extremely thorough.
That does not surprise me.
The one-eyed dwarf met the Emperor's gaze steadily. But when I heard what path you took, I was surprised indeed. You had intended to join the elves. Then, on the ship, you told me that you had no wish to be an elf like your parents.
He raised his hands, indicating the walls. Now I find you here within these walls, Emperor of the Alfar and ruler over a mighty realm.
And you advised me to hide away from humans, dwarves, and elves, because none would be able to look on me without fear or hatred.
Aefyddin smiled.
And then you said I should avoid Gerdlicard. Your exact words were, look for your own kind.
He ran his left hand over the metal plates.
I thought about it for a long time, but did not know where I would find anything like myself. But I followed your words and advice and left Gerdlicard for the south. I hoped that I would meet other Alfar whose nature was more similar to that of the elves.
I was a creature with no home, and who had only enemies in this world.
His voice grew lower and lower. Ireheart was astonished.
So it was the scholar's advice that sent Aefyddin back to the Alfar?
When you said goodbye, you told me you would find a place for yourself.
Tungdil tilted his head.
Was this what you planned? Conquering Gerdlicard by force?
To Ireheart's eyes, Aefyddin appeared tired, tired and depressed, as if a great burden rested on his soul.
It was impossible to gauge his state of mind from his dark eye sockets, but the lines on his countenance betrayed him. It was the way the scholar had looked on his return from the Black Abyss.
"What brings you to me, Tungdil Goldhand?" he asked,
a jolt running through his body. He sat upright and proud upon his throne. There was no trace now of low spirits.
"What could the High King of the Children of the Smith have to propose to me? Do you come with threats or requests, or to suggest an alliance?"
Tungdil frowned, puzzled.
"We came to Fosian at your invitation."
Aefyddin shook his head. "No. I've only just heard that you had returned to Gerdlicard. They told me you wanted to negotiate with me."
"Your messenger brought us here," insisted Tungdil. Aefyddin's face again showed surprise.
"As I did not send a messenger, let us ask him to whom I owe the pleasure of your visit."
He called the guard over and gave instructions.
"Where did you meet the elf?"
"He came to John Barra, when we were being received by the Janna clan."
"I thought we would find you there,"
Tungdil answered with a half-truth. "Charming," murmured Slim. "Absolutely charming. We've been tricked."
"Blast that Tirigan!"
Ireheart exploded. A loud, melodious ringing was heard. It was repeated quickly.
"Alarm!"
Boindil looked to the right and left at the Alfar guards.
"Get ready!"
He gave the cue.
"If the Black Eye moves, mow it down!"
Aefyddin rose from his throne and looked at the window.
"We are being attacked," he stated, incredulous. He looked at Tungdil inquiringly.
"Someone has been foolish enough to attack us now, after 180 cycles."
"It's nothing to do with me,"
Tungdil said calmly.
"Probably."
Then they heard a blood-curdling scream, and a great shadow filled the window. Ireheart swallowed hard, and instinctively wiped his hands over his armor, as if to remove the traces of the smell of the Cordrian's young.
"The Cordrian has followed me instead of the cocoon."
Chapter 16. Gerdlicard, Fosian Dwarmont, formerly Elf Realm of Alan-Dur, Fosian, late winter, 6491st to 6492nd solar cycles. The Cordrian's earth-shattering cry resounded for a second time,
but by now Ironheart and the others had inserted their wax earplugs, muffling the monster's terrible roar so that it could no longer root them to the spot. Tungdil drew Bloodthirster.
"We're all victims of Turrigan's treachery, Aphaton. He's the only one who can have put the Cordrion on our trail. When we've finished here, we can both ask him what the blazes he meant by it," he barked. "My men and I will fight to defend you, to show that the guilt is not ours."
"That's another clever move from the scholar," thought Ironheart.
The Emperor had grabbed hold of his spear and was aiming it at Tungdil.
"I can see from your armor that you must have been very close to the Alphar in recent cycles. Perhaps closer than you wanted to be," he replied. "What proof do I have that you are not working with Turrigan in this? You could be wanting to take advantage of the confusion in order to kill me."
Aphaton was keeping his eyes firmly trained on all the dwarves. Or at least, that is how it seemed.
"You can't really tell, of course."
Ironheart certainly felt he was being watched.
"Remember how we talked on board ship? Isn't that evidence enough that my intentions are honorable?"
The door flew open, and armored Alphar stormed in. They held their traditional long, narrow-bladed spears pointed at the dwarves. Aphaton stood motionless as a statue.
"We have both changed since then, Tungdil Goldhand."
"Not as much as it may seem."
Tungdil gestured to the window with his weapon. "Permit me to stand at your side in the battle. You will see the truth of what I say." The elf lowered his spear, and under his helmet Ironheart heaved a sigh of relief.
"You may."
Aphaton turned and left the hall with Tungdil at his heels, leaving Ironheart, Slynn, Balindar, and the Zadar alone in the throne room. Slynn lifted his visor.
"What, by Vrakus, do we do now?"
He took his crossbow in his hands and loaded it in readiness.
"We shan't have to help those two,"
said Balindar, going over to the window to check on the Cordrian's whereabouts. Its shadow passed over Phocion, and a vertical sheet of white flame shot down in front of the embrasure. Screams rang out, and stinking black smoke drifted up.
"It got the Black Eyes 2 floors down from us," he reported.
"I don't suppose they will have anything to counter an attack like this." Slynn touched his weapon.
"The crossbow makes me feel a little more confident."
Ironheart was trying to work out a plan.
"Right, everyone off to the lift. I want to get up onto the roof of this weird place. I can't see enough here."
"Charming. I'll be able to get a better aim at the Cordrian up there."
The Fourthling ran along at Boendil's side, with Balindar and the Zadar following less enthusiastically. The lift whizzed them up to the top, and soon they were standing on the city's gently sloping roof. From up there, the city looked like a smooth plateau, surrounded by unnaturally straight ravines. Dotted about were small square towers with vertical slits. Air blew through the spaces, causing a soft noise.
"Chimneys?"
Black sails made of linen had been strung up for food to dry. In other areas, the Alphar had stored huge leather sacks, also in black. Ironheart presumed they were to let water be warmed by the sun. His jaw dropped when he took in just how big Phocion was.
"It must be a good 2 miles long."
Slynn pointed out the firing towers on wheeled ramps, ready to be maneuvered to the corners of the roof. But those responsible for constructing this city had not reckoned with an enemy with the advantages of flight. 3 of the domes were already manned and were hurling missiles at the monster.
Too slow.
If there had been a besieging army at the foot of the walls, this hail of arrows and spears would have been an unbeatable defense system, with the projectiles traveling many hundreds of paces before hitting their targets. But with an attacker like the Cordrian, although a few hits were landed, they were ineffective. Slynn regarded his crossbow.
"My bolt is a bit on the small side," he sighed.
"I expect your women say that all the time,"
one of the Zadar said, his comrades laughing in response. The fourthling turned in fury, his crossbow raised.
"It'll be big enough for you and your filthy mouth." "What do you think he means?"
joked the Tsardar.
"Keep it. I don't want it."
"Shut up, you idiot gnome brains. What on earth do you think you're doing, winding each other up at a time like this?"
Ironheart reprimanded them angrily, adjusting his helmet and fastening the chin strap until it was uncomfortably tight, but secure.
"So, the Caudrian is after me? Then it will be risking its life. I'm going to entice it over to the firing towers."
He instructed the Tsardar to inform the Alfar manning the towers of his strategy.
"Brave," said the fourthling, "but dangerous."
"Oh, that's nothing. I like a challenge."
Ironheart dismissed the objection and took firm hold of his crow's beak. He bared his teeth.
"Come on, if you're hard enough, you filthy creature. You want the murderer of your young?"
The Tsardar hastened between the firing towers. When they had passed the dwarf's message to seven of them, it was time.
"It's heading back," warned Balindar. "Heading straight for us."
"That's the way."
Boindel set off for a section of the extensive roof area that could be covered by fire from all seven towers. The Caudrian's wings swished and whistled in the air, giving Ironheart an impression of the speed of its approach, but it was not coming in his direction. He stopped, gasping for breath, and turned around.
"Hey! You ugly, bug-eyed monster!"
He brandished his weapon to draw attention to himself.
"Ho there! I'm the one who destroyed your nestlings. Are you blind?"
He watched in amazement as the huge grey-skinned Caudrian landed on the roof and slipped headfirst into one of the artificial ravines. 4 feet, like canine paws, carried the weight of the hefty body. The ones in front were more like arms, with strong, flexible claws. The barrage from the catapults did not seem to trouble it at all, and the few spears and arrows that struck it were not inflicting serious injuries. The monster's claws scrabbled for a hold on the stonework, leaving deep marks.
"No, no, no!" yelled Ironheart. "Come back here, stupid animal!"
Slynn and Balindar came over to him.
"What's it doing?"
groaned the fourthling, watching the tip of the monster's tail disappear. Balindar was holding his side in pain and gasped,
"It's crawling in like a bear into a beehive."
They both looked accusingly at Ironheart.
"Wasn't it supposed to be attacking you?"
"Well, yes."
Boindel wiped the sweat from his forehead using the end of one of his braids.
"There must be something in Phocion that's more interesting than me."
Then he laughed.
"Let's go. We'll do for it. If Rakus is on our side, the beast will get stuck down there, and we'll be able to cut it into tiny slices."
He ran over to the edge of the ravine and saw that the Caudrian was pushing its way past the hanging gardens, looking for a horizontal passage wide enough for its massive bulk.
"Follow me!"
Ironheart leaped. His flight was a short one. He landed in a blossom hedge that covered him from head to foot in white pollen dust.
"Now I look like a fairy," he thought,
and grinned.
"A pretty little bearded fairy."
He fought his way free of the hedge, sneezing, and made for the bridge that led to the level the Caudrian was attempting to gain forcible entry to.
"What? By Teon?"
Balindar and Slynn landed next to him, their fall broken by the dense, black-leaved foliage of some small trees. They both crawled out of the tangle of branches, cursing, bits of leaf and twigs stuck in the gaps on their armor. No time to get rid of all that. They pursued the Caudrian with utmost haste. Ironheart had nearly caught up with the monster and could see it clearly. The wings were folded close to its muscular body, with no room to extend them in these narrow corridors. One was a little shorter than the other, as if it had regrown after an injury, perhaps. It was using its sharp claws to move its long, grey, wrinkled body, measuring 20 paces high and 60 in length. It dragged itself along through Fosian, pushing forward with its legs. It had crouched down as flat as it could.